Your dreams are bigger, bolder, and more badass than the life you're living now, but something just keeps getting in the way. Join certified coach and former therapist Diane Wingert for the Driven Woman podcast. She'll show you how to get rid of whatever is holding you back so you can stop spinning your wheels and up-level your life. Get ready to hop in and buckle up. This is the Driven Woman podcast, and we're heading for the fast lane.
Well, hey there, and welcome back, Driven Woman. You know, some of the most inspiring women that I get a chance to meet through this podcast are those who kind of had a rough start in life, not so different from my own. Today's guest is L.Y. Marlowe, who is an award-winning author, speaker, podcaster, entrepreneur, philanthropist, and women's empowerment advocate. Now, you know I am always on the lookout for guests who are an example of overcoming obstacles, regardless of what the specific challenges may be, and L.Y. is no exception. You see, she grew up with few advantages in a family culture of multiple generations of domestic violence, as well as teen pregnancy, low expectations, and bad choices. We talked at length about identity, resiliency, and the awareness that even from an early age, both L.Y. and I knew there has got to be another way. Now, her mission and message are to help women recognize that the things that they're afraid of, what she calls monsters, not only don't have to stop them, women can stand up to their monsters and actually learn to use fear as fuel. I know you're going to be fascinated by her perspective on this. But in addition to her coaching and consulting business, as well as her books, L.Y. runs a nonprofit organization that she calls Saving Promise. It's devoted to ending domestic violence and was named after her granddaughter. When she's not running her business, writing a book, recording podcasts, coaching women, or generally being a badass human being, L.Y. enjoys good chocolate and Pinot Noir. I also discovered through our conversations she's very funny and enjoys a good belly laugh with a friend, old or new. This week's pod praise comes from the one and only Mary Rogers of the Experience 50 podcast, who says, "I have been a huge fan of Diane Wingert for years. She's been a regular guest on many other podcasts, including my own. And every episode of The Driven Woman provides multiple aha moments for women who can't always seem to get it together." Thank you, Mary. I'm a big fan of yours, too. So without any further delay, I know you're going to be so inspired by this conversation with L.Y. Marlowe. After we talked, I decided to call it Transforming Pain into Purpose. You're about to find out why. Enjoy. So I'm a big old nosy girl, and ever since we first connected online and scheduled this interview, I've been dying to ask you, what does L.Y. stand for?
You know, L.Y., so I decided I wanted to be an author because I had discovered a lump in my breast and I discovered some other serious ailments, and my doctor said to me, I'll never forget, a Chinese doctor, dying Dr. Lee, he sent me off to get a battery of tests. I came back to get the results. And he said, the lump isn't what's killing you, but all this other stuff. And all this other stuff was the stress and the duress and trying to shatter that pink glass ceiling, right? Mm. And he said to me, change your life or change your life expectancy. Change your life or change your life expectancy.
I came that got right to the point.
Yes, I came home that Friday, Diane. And I really got still about what I wanted for my life. Because you know how we do. We chase the rat race and we're chasing and we're competing and we're doing all this stuff. And I said, what am I passionate about? And this was 20 plus years ago before passion became a thing.
You read my mind. It's like, because everybody is find your passion, you know, all it's like. Yeah. You're like, so you're the OG in the passion department.
I'm the OG. I am not ashamed to put it out there. I am from the OG. I am from the Woodstock era.
Same.
And so I said, well, what what do I want to do? What have I always been passionate about? And I've always been passionate about writing ever since I was a little girl. I knew nothing about writing except technical writing. My background at the time, I was with IBM and, you know, engineering, all that technical stuff. So I said, I want to be, Dr. Lisa changed my life or changed my life expectancy. I'm going to write a book. So I said, okay, if I write a book, what's going to be my name? I didn't even ask myself, well, how are you going to write a book? You don't know how to write, girl.
Right, right. You just skipped right over that just tiny little detail.
And around that time, J.K. Rowling was big on the scene with the Harry Potter series. I looked her up. I stalked her like you're stalking me.
Come on now. It wasn't all that.
And I learned that not only for those of you that are listening about, you cannot do what you have in your heart to do because you're afraid of failing, whatever. She was rejected over 100 times. And the one agent that decided to take her on said to her, her name is, I think, Jill K. Rowling. He said, men, we want this to be a unisex book and series, and men aren't going to buy a book about a little boy wizard by a woman named Jill. So we're dropping the Jill and we're going to use your initial J.K. Rowling. Dr. Lee said, change your life will change your life expectancy. I was like, I'm dropping the Lydia. I'm taking on L.Y. Marlowe.
So it's Lydia.
It's Lydia Y. Marlowe. And I decided I'm going to go with L.Y. Marlowe. And I that's like an ego, right? So I would show up for things and I'm like, and I still haven't stepped into it yet. I would say, they would see you on my book, L.Y. Marlowe. And I'm like, and they were like, so L.Y. And I'm like, you can call me Lydia. And they're like, no, we like L.Y. That's so much more cooler. So I went with it. And it would take me years to really step into that and own it. So now,
We do, though, I mean, this conversation today is going to be about one of my very favorite subjects, which is why women are so afraid and how to get past it. Because we all are here for a reason. We all have a story to share. We all have a purpose and some passion. But most of us are still in the starting blocks with our shoelaces tied together.
Preaching to me right now. You are so preaching to me right now because here's the thing. We are now turning the corner, hopefully, to post-COVID, right? We've been in this 18 plus months. It'd be about 2 years before we really start to see the light is flickering, but until we start to see it start to be steady. If we as women in those 2 years have not stepped into who we ought to be and who we really are, shame on you. Shame on you. You got to come out of this and you got to say, you know what? I'm L.Y. I am so-and-so. I am doing what I am born to do. I am stepping into what my God-given, Buddha-given, whoever you believe in, purpose, right? Whatever that is. And I'm not talking the term that everybody's using, tell your passion, embrace your purpose. I'm talking real. I'm talking real. And I'm coming from a place of real, Diane, because I just, during COVID, I took a year off from my nonprofit, Saving Promise, which is a national domestic violence organization inspired by five generations of domestic violence in my family.
Yes.
And it was killing me. My new Dr. Lee, no longer Dr. Lee, his name is now Dr. Wong. I don't know why I love Chinese doctors, but I do.
Well, you must like their philosophy about everything is energy.
Is energy, and that's what was going to heal me. I had to take a year off because the stress of building Saving Promise had attacked every part of my body. My brain, I was diagnosed with a, thank God, benign brain tumor. I had heart issues, autoimmune, everything. And finally, Dr. Wong said, he wrote a letter to my board, literally wrote a letter to my board and said, she has to rest. She has to take time off.
Don't let her work.
Don't let her work. She's silly and goofy because she feel like the world's going to stop, right? That her children are not going to be able to be raised by themselves. I ain't even got no children except.
But you, my friend, are a driven woman. That's why you're on the Driven Woman podcast. Now, not everything that drives us is healthy, as you discovered.
Yes.
But you're always going to be driven.
Yes, the drive.
You always have been.
The drive is in me. You know what I'm learning? To drive with some boundaries.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. try with some boundaries. Now I take something called a sabbatical Wednesday and sabbatical Sunday. Sabbatical Wednesday, I completely there is something about taking off a day in the middle of the week. See, we're always like, I'm going to take Friday off. I'm going to take Monday. But somehow it just feels like it by the time you get to Friday, you got so much to get caught up on. When you take off in the middle of the week, you work 2 days and then you're off. And that Wednesday in the middle of the day on a Wednesday, it feels like you're on vacation.
You know what I love about
Wednesdays
this?
And Sundays.
No, this is fantastic. What I love about this is that when we're driven, when we're ambitious, when we have audacious goals, as both of us do, we can get so much into the momentum of what we're doing that it becomes very compulsive, almost like an addiction. And after five straight days of go, 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 you don't relax on the weekend. You're still in that
turbocharge. Yes.
But after 2 days, it hasn't quite built up to that point.
Yes.
Where you can take that break.
You can take that break.
I love
it. And I love it. And I do it. So if you think about Wednesdays and Sundays, so Monday and Tuesday work, Wednesday completely unplugged. Thursday and Friday work. Saturday, you might dabble, but you know, I'll go to the Starbucks or I'll go get some coffee. You know what I mean? And then Sunday, boom, another one. So now you're ready for Monday and Tuesday.
Yes. How long have you been doing this?
A year now. When Dr. Wong said, take some time off, I took the year off. It would take me a few months to get into it. And I knew I needed to make it a habit. I was reading all kinds of books, like the guide to creating new habits and everything.
Atomic Habits.
Yes. And I read that Atomic Habits and it said, once you do something repeatedly, it becomes part of your thing. Now, if somebody even called me on a Wednesday, I don't even have to answer my phone, but I get pissed off. I'm like, don't be calling me. It's sabbatical Wednesday.
So you have, well, because I call this name it and claim it. You designated, because you're a very purpose-driven person, you designated a purpose for Wednesday. So it's not just like a grab bag day, you know, a lazy day. It has a specific purpose that you have named, claimed, designated, protected. And I think, you know, one of my philosophies, LY, is that all behavior is habit forming. All of it.
Very habit.
So if you are in the habit of working until you literally make yourself sick, and two doctors have to tell you, you are literally killing yourself. That was your habit. Now this is
an addiction.
You know, when people refer to workaholism, they never refer to it in the way that they refer to other isms. It's almost kind of a glamorous kind of ism. But the truth is, it will kill you just as effectively as any of the other isms. It just might take longer.
You know, when I realized that this was real for me, when I was at NIH, the National Institute of Health, when you get referred to NIH.
Yeah, you got some serious shit going on.
Yeah. I'm laying there.
No lie. You're like one for the books.
One for the books. And you got tubes in your arm and they're poking around in your heart. It's time for your ass to say, stop it.
Yep.
Stop it. And that meant, like, my daughter's 36. I said, you know what? Figure it out. Right? If you got stuff, go figure it out. She gets angry with me. Oh, you're a terrible mom. You know what? Then I'll be a terrible mom.
No, that's bullshit. If she's 36, you should not be her beck and call girl. Excuse me.
There are a lot of, from our generation, Diane.
I know.
What's that generation? L-I-E. I still won't even say the word sometime. The L-I-E word, my mother used to say, that's a curse word. I'm not allowed to say it. I'm now 50.
What?
Yes. But from that generation, when mama said no or whatever, you listen.
Yeah.
In this generation, you know.
All you had to do is give them the side eye and they'd be like, yes, mama.
Yes, mama.
Put the fear in God. But now they argue back to you. No, it's. And you know what? I know that you spent time as a single parent. I spent time as a single parent. I was a single parent of three for a decade through their teen years. And that is not for cowards, for sure. But I think oftentimes as single moms, we do too much for our kids because we feel guilty that they're not growing up in the traditional family. And we feel guilty for whatever the effects of the family dissolution is having on them. And I think I knew on some level, I was doing things out of guilt and later came to regret it, but I didn't realize it at the time. You know, I just thought I want to make them feel better.
Yes. Here's the thing. When I was diagnosed with all those health issues and I laid on Dr. Sarah's couch every week, because that's the one referred me to a cognitive behavior therapy to change my behaviors.
But you went to a cognitive therapist and you laid down on the couch?
I'm being...
Okay, yeah, metaphorical. Okay, got right. It. You were sitting up taking notes, okay?
I was sitting up taking notes.
Because I used to be one of those.
Yeah. And I realized that the stress, I was thinking it was all about my work, but some of it was about my personal life too. Mm-hmm. Having that guilt that you're talking about, yep, with my daughter and Promise. Promise is my daughter's little girl, hence the name Saving Promise.
The one who got you to wake the F up with that precious little girl. Because little kids haven't been brainwashed to the point that adults have. So they just speak their truth because they don't know how to do anything else. It is powerful.
It is powerful. And if you recall what she said to me, she told me, don't look at the monsters.
Yeah.
And I would name my third book that.
Yes, ma'am. Your podcast and all the thing, you know, it's like, but it's so true because, well, it's like in the Bible says that, you know, that the children shall lead them because children speak honestly, until they learn not to. But, you know, it's interesting to me. So many things are interesting to me about your story. But one of them is that you just kept going. And you needed a doctor to tell you, you are literally creating a life-threatening situation for yourself. Did you not notice that? Or did you just have your foot pressed down so hard on the gas pedal that you just whizzed past all the signs that said, you know, falling rocks and, you know, curves ahead and all that? Were you just kind of out of touch with your body? Or how do you think it got to that point?
I think it got to that point. I knew I was pushing the engine the throttle was going over 100, right?
You were in the red zone on the regular.
I was in the red zone, but I was someone who was very health conscious. I was eating right. I was exercising. I'm very energetic and athletic and all those things. It wasn't until I went into menopause.
Oh,
when
yes.
You go into menopause.
The change of life.
The change of life changes your life.
Oh, yeah.
And my body could not keep up at that pace anymore. And eventually it kind of broke down on me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand it until, and I write about it in Don't Look at the Monster, where I'm laying inside this MRI machine, the kind that you go into and it makes you feel claustrophobic.
Scary as shit. I felt like I was buried alive the first time I had one
alive.
Of those.
I keep my eyes shut because I cannot, if I look up,
same.
I can go crazy.
Same.
But I was laying in there with a helmet on because they were looking at my brain because there was a little tumor growing in there.
Mm.
And I remember thinking, what have I done to myself?
Mm.
What have I done to myself? And it would come to be known that the tumor that was growing was a result of a pituitary gland disorder that is responsible for, you know, distributing all your hormones throughout your body.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this little thing that sits in the middle of in your brain. And it started to swell because I was running on full throttle and my body wasn't producing enough hormones and everything. And I was in menopause, so it was already declining in hormones. And so when the pituitary gland doesn't have the hormones that it needs, it starts creating its own hormones, except it's bad hormones. And then it starts to grow like a tumor in your head.
But you know what's fascinating about this? I mean, the way you think, you have an abuse history, multiple generations of domestic violence. You I believe had an abusive marriage as well. And most people who grow up with violence, most people who grow up with abuse, with trauma, with poverty, with all of the things that were the circumstances of your early years, develop on some level a victim mindset.
Mm-hmm.
They come to feel like, you know, shit just happens to me. You know, I got dealt a shitty hand of cards and, you know, when bad things happen that they create, they're still a victim of it. They blame other people. They blame God. They blame their family. They blame, you know, their skin color. They blame whatever. Mm-hmm. But they don't take responsibility. And that, like all behavior, is habit forming. But what's interesting is here you are in the MRI machine, got a helmet on. They're looking at your brain, suspecting a tumor, confirm, in fact, you are growing a tumor. And you do not think, poor me, why did this happen to me? You thought, what have I done to myself? Now, but I'm not hearing that it's in that the way we sometimes bully ourselves, sometimes blame ourselves. I'm just hearing a kind of an awakening of your awareness that what have I done in a very neutral way? And I think given your early circumstances, that's unusual. It's unusual that you have that mindset. I was a therapist for a lot of years, and I also grew up in an abusive household. And on top of that, I'm adopted. So there was a lot of stuff around that. And I noticed that most of the other kids, because we were all, most of us were adopted, most of the other kids had that victim mindset. And I didn't. And I've always been really curious about other people who came up in that same way, who take ownership, who take responsibility, who don't think bad things are happening to them. They realize they play a role. Do you remember a time when you didn't think that way and you made a change? Or do you think you always were that person who owned your life?
I think I always owned my life. Even Diane, when I was in a very abusive relationship, I was asking myself, what did I do to deserve this? However, I believe that there were points in my life for different reasons where I was really needing to step up and take responsibility, like with my health, right?
I could in particular,
say, yeah, you know, I could have kept saying, well, my reason for continuing to go at the pace was, well, Mom, I'm getting that much closer. I just need to raise this much more money for Saving Promise. And if I could just do this, then, you know, there was always another, if I could just, right? And
the goalpost kept moving.
And I kept trying to get closer to it because as soon as I get this, then I can pull back and I can take care of these things.
And you probably did that in your corporate. I mean, you were very successful in corporate before you started the nonprofit and became an author and an entrepreneur. But you probably just carried over with those same habits, right?
Yeah, but you know what triggered those habits? And, you know, I grew up in poverty, domestic violence, crime, everything. You name it, I had it. I think what drove me, instead of becoming, having a victim mode, what drove me was wanting to excel beyond where I came from. You know, that I was in that abusive relationship because I grew up in poverty and I and we didn't talk about this at home. And this was our normal five generations. So my drive was, you know what? I'm going to work and I'm going to push and I'm going to do this because I don't want to go back to that. I don't want to ever have another man put his hands on me. I don't want to ever have to answer to somebody when I don't know how I'm going to feed myself. You know, and I never, despite growing up in poverty, I never, even I was 17 years old when I had my daughter. I never went on public assistance. I would not have that victim mindset that, you know what, I'm going to let the government take care of me and my daughter. I came out working three jobs because I did not want to be like the others. And so I think that can be almost just as dangerous as the victim mindset.
It can't. I mean, I think you're making a really, really good point. Why is that? I think sometimes what kicks us into our drive can easily become overdrive. And sometimes it's like we know where the gas pedal is. We just forget that there's also a brake and an emergency brake and the lower gears. But did you have something to prove to your family, to your neighborhood, or did you need to prove it to yourself? Or were you just so determined that this life This life that I know, I have known, everyone I am connected to knows and accepts as the norm, that's not for me. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get the hell out of there. Or did you have something to prove that you could to either you or to them?
Honestly, Diane, both. Mm-hmm. I think I was the first in my immediate family to go to college. Mm-hmm. In the African-American family, skin color is an issue even in African-American community. So yep. I was the only light one. All of my siblings were very dark. I used to be teased for being light.
Yep.
I was the one that when mom gave us $2, you know, for lunch, I would take mine and I would take 50 cents and I would put the other $1.50 away and save it. So I was trying to prove that I wasn't better than you. I just wanted to be accepted like you. Right. Mm. And then part of it was, I don't want my daughter to grow up like this. Now, no matter how hard I worked towards that, she eventually would become a victim of domestic violence and would become the reason for me even stepping away with her daughter, Promise, and launching the nonprofit. I remember I have moved her 3 different times to 3 different states. And the third time I moved her, she ended up in Philadelphia with my parents. And somehow he always ended up where she was. And now here he was there with her. And I get a call one night that said that he had strangled her while Promise, their 6-month-old baby girl, lay on the bed next to her. Mm. And she would hear Promise screaming and she would fight to save Promise. The next morning after I got her and Promise to safety, I wrote a letter to the only person in the world that I thought could help me. And that letter started with Dear Oprah. I would never mm-hmm. forget. It was August.
I know this story. Yep.
2007. And there were a few lines in that letter that ultimately became the title for Saving Promise organization. I said, if you cannot help, I said, Oprah, last night, my daughter was strangled, almost killed again. If you cannot help me save my daughter, please help me save Promise. And so now, even if I had gotten over the part of my life feeling like I needed to prove something or whatever, now here was another goal. I have to save Promise.
Yeah.
So now the help starts to rack up because I got to save this little girl. I mean, I understand I can't save my daughter anymore because I've tried that with her, but Promise, I have to save. So there was, you're right. I think it was both. I was always trying to prove something or I was trying to defend something from happening.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm struck by the fact that how often the very things that we are trying to prevent in our children end up happening anyway. Mm-hmm. And I always wonder, did you want that for her even more than she wanted it for herself? Because you and I are so much alike in so many ways. And I was always that super responsible one. And at some point in my life, I realized if I want this outcome more for my child, my friend, my client, my colleague, if I want this more, if I am more committed to this outcome for them than they are, it can't happen.
It can't happen.
Because you cannot drag somebody to their purpose. It has to be their purpose. But it is so freaking painful to see the people you love the most make destructive choices that you know how to prevent and are doing everything you can to try to do so. Absolutely. It's excruciating.
Mm-hmm. It is. It is really excruciating. And you're right. There had come a time when I finally said, until she takes responsibility for her own safety, I can move her to all 50 states. Because yeah. here's the thing.
And other countries, too, after you get through them, you know.
After you get through them, right.
Work your way down the list.
I come to realize, and you know, have this light bulb moment, because sometimes you enable a person as well by doing that.
Oh, honey. Right? That's the word. I was enabling one of my kids who was struggling with drugs and I didn't realize it. And dude, I got so much freaking training about this kind of stuff you would think, but I was in my own blind spot and I thought I was preventing this child from falling through the cracks by kind of swooping in and, you know, boosting him up. It took my other 2 kids to confront me and say, Mom, stop enabling. And I was like, what are you talking about? I'm not, you know. And it's like, yeah, you are.
Yes, yes. I had the same situation. I had this light bulb moment when I was like, wait a minute, I moved her 3 different times. How's he finding her? Well, he's finding her because she's calling him.
You were working on the wrong problem. You're trying to get away from him. You needed to, but you know, that's so, so hard.
It is.
But that precious little granddaughter, that changes everything because she had not yet reached the point of being able to make any choices for herself. Choices were being made that affected her. She had no control over them.
Yes. Yes. So now I got a new goal. I got, you know, I can, you know, you're right. She does not have any, you know, she's not complicit in anything that's happening right now. So I got to save Promise, to the point that I named the organization Saving Promise.
But you know what? You are a wonderful storyteller, starting with the story you told yourself. Mm-hmm. You told yourself your identity from a very early age was different than the people around you.
Yes.
You, it's not that you thought you were better than them or that you didn't belong to them or with them, but you had a very strong sense of your own identity and it was not aligned with your circumstances. And I was exactly the same. And it's always been fascinating to me how two people in the same set of circumstances will go in very different directions. I have a question for you. Do you think that there are people who are just naturally born resilient with the ability to not only succeed in life in spite of difficult circumstances, but maybe even because of them? Do you think that there are people who are just have that in their DNA and others just don't? Or do you think that can be taught and learned?
I think for me, I truly believe that is inherited, is part of a DNA. Can it be trained and learned? Yes, but I feel like you have to have a certain makeup of who you are to really have the stick-to-it-ness, right? Mm-hmm. Because there has never been a time in my life that I did not stick to it. You know,
even to your own detriment,
like to my own detriment.
You would stick to things so completely that your health was being sacrificed in the meantime and probably other things too.
Mm-hmm. You can teach someone resilience, but you cannot teach them how to really own it, right? You could teach someone, hey, if this happens, you have to overcome it. You have to let it go. I've had girlfriends and friends and whatever that had bad breakups and relationships, whatever. Eventually they get over it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that you could teach them to stay in that place.
Mm.
I think that's
innate.
That's innate. That is inside of you. You're born with that. Now, the question is, do people who are born with it often tap into it and use it, or do they prefer to stay on the other side?
I absolutely agree. My analogy for this, Awai, is that I think you can turn up the heat, but the pilot light has to be there.
Yes.
You have to have that spark. You have to have that heat. You have to have that little, even if it's a tiny little kernel, a little tiny mustard seed of that identity that says, I don't belong in these circumstances. I want more. I'm headed to the high ground. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get there. And I think that can be cultivated. It can be enhanced. It can be developed. You can turn it up. But I think if it's not there to begin with, you just can't. And sadly, because if it could be taught, I think there'd be a lot more healthy and a lot fewer self-destructive people out there. But for everybody else, for the women listening now who identify as being driven, but not always reaching their goals for one reason or another. In my experience and through other guests on the podcast, the number one reason seems to be fear. Now, you have faced many challenges in your life, as have I, and I'm certain that you have been terrified at times, but it didn't stop you. What is your secret?
I think my secret is first a very, And I'll put it this way as we close. I had a dream this week, and it was, I was surrounded by all these whales. I was walking on water or something, and all these whales were below me. So I woke up, and the first thing I did is I turned to Alexa. I said, Alexa, what does it mean when you dream about whales? And Alexa said, it means that you are finally stepping into your spiritual self.
Mm.
You're finally stepping.
You're walking on water. That's pretty freaking biblical.
I was like, maybe Jesus or something. And so that's what I think it is. I think is an innate, am I religious? No, I'm not a religious person, but I am spiritually connected in a way that I know that I can do this. I can overcome this. I can, this fear, this regret, these doubts, the worry.
My monsters.
I think is having that base, that foundation.
It's such a powerful message, and it goes through so much of your body of work, your book, your podcast, your courses, your speaking. And you're such a wonderful example of what you teach. I mean, we can learn about anything and teach others, but you are teaching from your example, from your own history, and sharing your personal stories and the vulnerability of doing so. It's so impactful. And I can only imagine the lives of the women that you are changing as a result, because it's one thing to teach other people things you've learned. It's another thing to crack yourself wide open and show them what it takes to get there. You know, the courage, the bravery, and the vulnerability of it is really compelling. And I have so much respect and admiration for you for that.
Broken Open, that book by Elizabeth Lesser. Broken
right.
Open. I love it. Yes. Broken Open. Break open. Just break open and
let it's what it takes.
Let it take. Right? Diane, it's been amazing.
This has been the best conversation I've had this week. Please tell me we're going to do it again.
Yes, absolutely. I got to have you on, and we're going to keep the conversation. So let's talk.
Awesome. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Diane. Can I be honest with you? At the beginning of each new year, I always told myself, this is the year I'm going to get my habits dialed in. This is the year I'm going to be crystal clear about my goals, and I'm going to crush them. This is the year I'm going to get my shit together on every level, and I'm going to do it all by myself. Been there, done that, got a whole stack of t-shirts. But you know, it wasn't until I started working with my own coach that I realized what a difference it makes to have guidance, support, and accountability from someone who's not only like-minded, but like-brained. Yeah, I'm talking about another driven woman, entrepreneur, who also has ADHD, and has got it going on. I have two openings in my signature one-on-one 12-week coaching program, and one of them might have your name on it. There's a link to a free consult with me in the show notes if you think this might be the year that you really get serious and go all in on an ADHD-friendly business and life. While you're thinking about that, have a listen to what one of my client's success stories has to say about the difference it made to work with me.
It's funny because at first I said I would never own my own practice, and now I own my own practice. And I would say, I'm never going to take it any more than just treating patients. Now I'm thinking about how can I start my own
institute. You know,
yeah, exactly. Even like training other therapists, having a certification with my name that I am, you know, I haven't thought of the name yet, but I'm certified in this technique or whatever the case may be. And really just helping other therapists help their patients the way I help mine.
You've been listening to the Driven Woman podcast with Diane Wingert. Want more straight talk and strategy each week that will take you from spinning to winning? Don't forget to hit subscribe in your podcast player so you won't miss a single episode. Then head on over to the Driven Woman free and private Facebook group community. See you there.